A few years ago, I worked with an elderly preacher. Well, he was a good bit older than I was. And he told me one time he was preaching, and in the middle of a sermon, he began to, this sounds familiar, I've preached this before. And he began to like think about it as he was talking, and the more he talked, the more he realized, he preached it the week before at the same congregation. And it just so flabbergasted him that he just stopped in a sermon. And he said, you know that I preached this last week, and I'm preaching it again this week, obviously. And if you don't do what I say, I'll preach it again next week. Well, this sermon, I look back in my records. I have preached this sermon before, and I knew it before I planned to preach it, but it was in 2012. But because of where we are with growing and the construction and so forth, I really think that this lesson has some application and worth hearing again. And somebody might say, you've started a building program and you're going to talk about the Tower of Babel? That doesn't seem like that's the best motivation to do so, but I think you'll see as we get into this lesson why it is so appropriate. What I'd like for us to do this morning, if you have your Bible, open it to Genesis chapter 11, and I'd like for us to look at the first 9 verses in Genesis chapter 11. And make a few comments about the text, and then I'd like to draw some application to our life today. The Tower of Babel, I grew up saying Babel, but I don't know why that wouldn't be Babel. It's probably more accurately pronounced Babel, but I'm going to say Babel all the way through, I'm sure. Let's go ahead and read in chapter 11, verse 1. Now the whole earth had one language and one speech. And it came to pass as they journeyed from the east that they found a plain in the land of Shinar, and they dwelt there. Then they said to one another, come, let us make bricks and bake them thoroughly. They had brick for stone and they had asphalt for mortar. And they said, come, let us build ourselves a city and a tower whose top is in the heavens. Let us make a name for ourselves, lest we be scattered abroad over the face of the whole earth. But the Lord came down to see the city and the tower which the sons of men had built. And the Lord said, indeed, the people are one, and they all have one language, and this is what they begin to do. Now nothing that they propose to do will be withheld from them. Come, let us go down there and confuse their language, that they may not understand one another's speech. So the Lord scattered them abroad from there over the face of all the earth, and they ceased building the city. Therefore its name is called Babel or Babel, because there the Lord confused the language of all the earth, and from there the Lord scattered them abroad over the face of all the earth. Probably most of us have heard that story before. It gives us a historical reference as to the origin of the various languages that exist and why they exist. There was a time when everybody spoke the same language, which makes sense, right? If we all come from Adam and Eve and their descendants, and then Noah and his family after the flood, you would think that everybody spoke the same language. as I heard this story when I was a child, sometimes I would hear things that weren't always accurate in the story. Like, what were they trying to do? They were building this tower so they could reach their way into heaven. I remember having Bible class teachers when I was a little boy tell me that they were trying to get up there where God was, and they were going to build a building so high they could just kind of like Jack and the Beanstalk-ish just step off the tower into heaven. Really? That's not what's going on. They were building a tower that reached to the heavens, something that was really high. They didn't have the notion that they could enter the place of the dwelling of God, I don't think at all. Surely they had better sense than that. And you know, what was so wrong about building a tall tower anyway? Well, if you recall God gave Adam and Eve a commission, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth. Well, they began to do that, and then the flood came and everybody was killed except for Noah and his wife and his three sons and their wives. And now he recommissions them in Genesis chapter 9. He says, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth. That's what he had wanted Adam to do and had begun, and then it got sidetracked because of the flood, and now we're starting all over again with Noah and his immediate family, and he recommissions them, I want you to fill the earth. Well, what was the purpose of building this city and this tower? Twofold, we want to make a name for ourselves, lest we be scattered over the face of the earth. Well, that's what God wanted them to do. So they're doing something that has the intent of thwarting what God said to do in the first place. And so God says, you know, I'm going to go down and confuse their language. And he does, and nobody understands each other. And they can't cooperate and get the work done on this city because nobody. And so they just kind of grouped up in their little language pods. And they did what God wanted them to do, scatter and fill the world. So we see why this was wrong. It was an effort, well, there's some pride involved. Look at what we're doing. We want to make a name for ourselves, and we're thwarting God's purpose in the process. And so God comes down and stops the whole thing. Now that's the story, and you say, well, how does that apply to, you know, you look out right there and you see all this dirt and a hole in the ground and all this construction taking place, and you're going to talk about a time when the people rose up and built and God wasn't pleased with it, and that's the lead in to our expansion? Well, yes, but for different reasons. You see, I think from the story of the account of the Tower of Babel, there are some really practical lessons for us to learn today. And what drives it is this statement by God. Look at what he says in verse 6. He said, indeed, the people are one and they all have one language, and this is what they begin to do. And listen, now nothing will be withheld from them. Because of the qualities that those people possessed, God looked at them and said, you know what? Whatever they set their mind to do, they're going to be able to do it. It's going to take my direct intervention and confuse their language to get them off of what they were purposing to do. What was it that they were, or the qualities that they possessed, that caused God from heaven to say, you know what? I see that there's no way that they can be stopped. Whatever they purpose to do, they'll be able to accomplish it. In this case, they were trying to do something that was out of harmony with God's will, and so he intervened and he stopped them. But God's divine commentary is that nothing can stop them, well, apart from himself. But what is it about them that had that kind of power? I see three things in the text, and I want us to consider those three things. The first thing is this. They were willing to work. Well, how do you know that? Well, look at what it says in Genesis 11 and verse 3. Then they said to one another, come, let us hire out some work. No, come, let us make bricks and bake that. They didn't go to the store and buy, you know, bricks. They had to make the bricks. They had to bake the bricks. And they had bricks for stone, and they had asphalt for mortar. There's work involved. We're starting a project. We've got to, you know, it's not like going to Lowe's or Home Depot and picking up your supplies. These people had to make their own supplies. That's work. But they were willing to do it. They said, let's do this. And they agreed. And they got to work, and it was working. They were doing the things that they were doing. And don't you know that took a lot of sacrifice? These guys, how are they making a living? Who's paying them while they're doing this? How are they getting this job done? Like, you know, they didn't work at the mill. They didn't work at, a chemical plant or something like that. I'm sure they were farmers. I'm sure they had responsibilities in the field to harvest and plant. And so, well, how are they doing all this plus that that required sustenance for their families? I don't know. I guess you'd say it was sacrifice. It was working really hard. If we have a mind to work, Nehemiah chapter 4 and verse 6, we can accomplish great things. If we have a willingness to take on extra burden and say, you know what, I know this is hard, but it doesn't last forever. We can do this. I'll take on the responsibility. We can do great things. And I want to make mention of this because sometimes I've heard this statement made, and it's one of those truisms that isn't really true. You know, one of those urban legend kind of things. Here's what I've heard said. Tell me if you haven't heard this. Every little bit helps. Haven't we all heard that? Every little bit helps. And that's just repeated as if that were true over and over again. And that's just, folks, that's just not true. Sometimes a little bit doesn't help. Sometimes what is needed and is necessary is bold, courageous, sacrificial acts, not just a little bit. We might offer a little bit and salve our conscience with that truism, every little bit helps, I did my part, I gave a little bit. But sometimes a little bit isn't enough. And it's just done to salve our conscience. You know, if I were in the ocean, I fell overboard off a ship, and I can't swim, supposing I couldn't swim, and I am just struggling to keep my head above the waves, and I'm yelling up back up there, and I say, throw me a rope. And somebody's, I've got a loose thread right here. You know, is that going to help? That's not going to help. And they say, but every little bit helps. No, it doesn't. I need more than a thread in that moment. I need something bigger, more substantial, something that will save the day, save my life. And when it comes to this building, let me just tell you in advance, there will probably be times when we're going to have to make great sacrifices. And we're going to have to dig deep. And we're going to have to commit ourselves to a work that is not easy. We're going to have to walk by faith and not by sight. There are going to be times when every little bit doesn't help. We have to be bolder than that, more courageous than that, more sacrificial than that, to rise up and meet the challenges of the day. But I'm telling you, if we have that mindset, we can accomplish anything. What I'm trying to say is don't settle. Don't buy into this notion that you can just kind of coast along and stuff will just lay down in front of you because after all, you're a child of God. Listen, for them to have God say, nothing will be withheld from them that they propose to do. The reason he said that is because those people were willing to work and to work hard. And the same needs to be said of us. It's not skimming off the top that is always what is needed. Sometimes you can skim off the top and you can meet all the needs and all the challenges that exist. But sometimes we got to do more than that. We've got to sit down and make some serious plans and evaluations and give sacrificially. You know, our brothers and sisters who have gone before us in the early centuries of the church, and they were asked to give so much. They were asked to give their lives. Can you imagine what it would be to hold your baby in your arms and maybe be in the Roman Colosseum as they're about to unleash the lions and the bears to have you and your child killed and torn apart? That's the kind of sacrifice they made. And we live in a culture where we don't face that kind of opposition. It's easy to be a Christian today. We complain about sometimes our government, but listen, the amount of religious freedom that our government gives us today would be welcomed and embraced by most nations in the world. We're a little bit aggravated with it because it doesn't let us do what we used to do 30, 40, 50 years ago. But it's still better than most of the world has. And so in my comfortable culture, I'm saying, when and how do I get to make this kind of courageous contribution to the cause of Christ? I'm not going to be asked to lay my life down. I'm not going to be asked to surrender my property to the government. I'm not going to be asked to or forced to go to prison because of my convictions in Jesus. So how do we live out courageous discipleship? Maybe it's in things like this. Maybe it's when we make bold, decisive, courageous, sacrificial decisions that are not easy, but they're needed. Maybe that's how we join the number of those who have gone on before us. They had a mind to work. Look at the second point that we see here in Genesis chapter 11 and verse 6. And it says that they were all one. They were one. The people were one. They were united, in other words. They weren't fussing with each other. There weren't conflicts among them. They were one. They had a single purpose, and they'd come together to fulfill that purpose. And if we're to be successful today, we as a people of God have to be one. Have we not seen churches derailed by division, conflict? People get into petty disagreements, and then they align their friends with them against the friends on the other side. And before you know it, a church doesn't even exist anymore. Or it becomes so beaten down and people leave for the world, and they can't even maintain and can't do the work that God has called them to do. John chapter 17, Jesus said, you need to be one. As I am in my Father and He is in me, that the world might believe that you sent me. The disciples of Jesus need to be united. Ephesians 4 and verse 3 encourages us to give diligence, to endeavor, to maintain, to keep the unity of the Spirit in the bond of peace. Have you ever thought about that? What's it mean to maintain, to give diligence to maintain the unity of the Spirit? There are things that sometimes happen that I don't like. If I had my way, if I had my opinion, I'd do it this way or that way. But no one always gets their opinions, right? No one always gets their way. Sometimes we have to step back and say, you know, for the better good, I'll acquiesce. It's not a matter of doctrine. I can consent to that. Because disunity destroys. Jesus said a house divided against itself cannot stand. We're going through a time right now that has tremendous potential for conflict, for disagreement. There are, you know, when we get inconvenienced and when we get uprooted out of our routines and then we get shuffling around and like our classrooms are all over the place now and pretty soon we're going to be uprooted here and we're going to be thrown down the other end of the hall and you're going to be stuck with listening to the same preacher twice. Isn't that the way Dave said it? There are going to be some things where we find ourselves in just I always had that back row or that first row in the auditorium and somebody sitting in that, if that were a pew and not a folding chair, that would have been my seat. Somebody else has it now. We say that's kind of silly, but I think in some places that would be a real deal. I hope not here. But my point is, there are a lot of disruptions to to normalcy for us that's coming up in a little bit. Can we get through that while loving each other and pursuing the same goal and being patient with each other and to have that singular united front as we continue to face the world. You know, Nehemiah was trying to build the walls while he had some enemies out there that were trying to defeat him. And so here's what he did. He said, we just put a sword in one hand and a hammer in the other and went to work. We need to do the same. You know, there's still the devil to fight. We need to be about that. There's still the lost to reach. And we need to be about that. And at the same time, there's work to do here. We need to be about that as well. They were willing to work. They were united. And let me give you the third point. They were able to communicate. See what it says in 11 verse 6? They all had one language. That implies communication. They could talk to each other and understand each other. If anything is to succeed, you have to communicate. If you're on a ball team, if you're on a basketball court, you've got to communicate with each other. You have to tell each other there's a pick to your right or to your left. You know, you have to tell each other all, there's all kinds of communication that take place. And if you don't communicate, if you don't talk, you'll fail. And the same is true in the work of the church. What happens if we stop talking to each other? What happens if the elders close the door and they don't communicate to us what's going on? Then we begin to start talking, I wonder what's going on. Why are they so tight-lipped about this? Are they hiding something? And see, lack of communication breeds distrust. And sometimes, you know, it's not just, don't just say, oh yeah, elders don't always communicate. And by the way, they've done a great job at communicating to us what we're doing and how we're doing it and have had a couple meetings with us about that and trying to keep us abreast as best they can. But here's, this communication goes two ways. How are the elders supposed to deal with certain things, certain issues, if you don't go to them and say, this is an issue? You know, when I just kind of let this boil up in my own mind and I get all bent out of shape and I'm to the point of wanting to go somewhere else and leave because I've never communicated that to, how's it supposed to get fixed if we don't communicate? We need open communication both directions. And when we do that, we learn to trust each other. And needs are addressed and taken care of before they get out of hand. That's the power that these people had in Genesis chapter 11 that caused God to say, you know what? They can do whatever they plan to do because they were willing to work and they were united and they were talking. Now, here's my final point, and we'll close with this thought. What if today we together pursue a goal that has the Lord's approval, unlike the Tower of Babel? But in this case, we're going to do something that God is in favor of and He would bless. What if we possessed those same qualities? What if we're willing to work? What if we stand as a united front? And what if we talk to each other, communicate? What can stop us? It won't be God as it was in the Tower of Babel. They were doing something wrong. And God said, well, nothing else will stop them. So I'm going to have to intervene myself and intervene and stop it. That's what stopped it then. But what if we're doing that which God approves of and we possess those same qualities? Then let me ask the question, what can stop us? I don't know that there is anything. So I want to encourage you to take on these qualities and characteristics as an individual and as collectively as a church. So that we can get through this project, not just this, it's not just about the bricks and the mortar that is involved in what we're doing. This is about the future. This is about reaching people for Christ. This is about positioning ourselves in an area of Knoxville that is growing and meeting the needs of tomorrow. It's about making sacrifices for a generation yet to be that can stand on the work that we did in preparing them and paving the way for them. Let's work. Let's sacrifice. It's not going to be forever. Let's be united as we engage in this process, and let us continue to talk and communicate. And what can stop us? If you're here this morning and you're not yet a child of God, I hope that you'll think seriously about your relationship with Him. Why would you not want to be a part of His family? To have the privilege of being called a son or a daughter of God. That can be yours this morning. Jesus said, he that believeth and is baptized shall be saved. If you need to do that, we'll assist you in that. And if you're a child of God already but unfaithful, and you realize it's time to come home and to rededicate myself to the Lord, we'll pray with you to that end if you'll come as we stand together and sing.